The governor blames Glenda Ritz for ISTAP problems. What's his motive? The House passes the bill aimed at reducing Ritz's power, ethics reform advances, and a victory for supporters of Sunday alcohol sales. That plus the fight that ended the basketball season for two Indiana high schools and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending February 13, 2015.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, the governor issued an executive order demanding shorter test times for the ISTEP exam, something like 6 hours instead of 12, and he hired outside experts to find out how to make that possible. Mike Pence made that announcement in what amounts to the latest battle between the Republican governor and the Democratic state school superintendent, Glenda Ritz. Pence blamed the longer test times on both dysfunction on the State Board of Education and the Department of Education. Glenda Ritz is in charge of both of them. Here is the governor, followed by a Ritz spokesman, Daniel Altman.
Well, I don't want to make it personal. I mean, look, but the Indiana Department of Education is completely responsible for crafting the test conducting the test in the state of Indiana. That is their responsibility.
Obviously, we're disappointed to see that he's apparently, again, attempting to work around the superintendent and around the Department of Education instead of with them.
Who deserves the blame for the length of the ISTEP test? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, is Glenda Ritz at fault?
You know, Lent is starting. And I think that we just saw the governor do his Pontius Pilate routine here. Because what's amazing about this is he has no command of the facts. What's happened here is it was first with Mitch Daniels, we're in Common Core. Then with Mike Pence and the ideologues, we're out of Common Core. That's what's created this problem. Now the transition test has to be done in 1 year instead of 2 years. And by the way, in the middle of that, the legislature waded in, and they put two more requirements that added 3 hours onto the length of the test. Glenda Ritz had a State Board of Education meeting, which, by the way, is available on tape, in August, where the vendor laid out the fact that the test, as a result of these changes, was going to be 50% longer than the previous test. And longer
but it
doesn't
ended
mean
up being 100% longer.
What they said then was they would tell you there would be 50% more questions, but they couldn't tell you how long they would take because some of them require analysis, not just multiple choice, but analysis, and take longer to do. And they were told that back then. And now he goes up there and says, shorten it. Well, the legislature has to act to shorten it.
Right.
But I think, fortunately, they're going to do that.
Well, there was a State Board of Education meeting today, and Glenda Ritz agreed to take several steps recommended by the experts hired by the governor, and it will reduce the test by over 3 hours.
Still requires legislative action, though.
It still requires the legislature to eliminate the social studies
which they put
requirement
on
for 5th and 7th grade. Is this over with? Is this settled?
No, it's not settled. And the governor is absolutely right. It's the superintendent's responsibility to craft the test and conduct the test. I mean, everybody's pretty clear on that one.
But she crafted a test, did she not, that met the governor's requirements and the requirements
of
the federal
here's
government?
The deal.
Right.
Here's the
That's
deal.
The deal.
The deal is, I didn't interrupt you, Ann.
It's okay, Mike. You usually
keep
do.
Keep after it, okay?
Go ahead.
They usually do a pilot in the fall before the test. They refused to do the pilot this time. They did not do one, which would have told us they'd do it at it for 1,000 students generally, and most schools like to be in that pilot because that gives their students more time to practice what's going to happen. Well, they didn't do that. And so now you end up with a test for third graders that's a half hour shorter than the bar exam that you take if you want to be a lawyer in the state of Indiana. And she knew that. She knew that all along. And the reason she wanted that to happen, quite frankly, and it doesn't have to be longer because it's harder, that's just ridiculous. The reason that she wanted that was because the bottom line here is she does not want to have schools accountable for grade systems.
Well, she does want.
She wants. She's asking for a delay. And by doing this the way she did it and trying to force the 12-hour test, which has already been delivered to schools without much input from anybody else, she was hoping to get her reprieve on the grades for schools, which is absolutely wrong. Isn't going to happen.
The state accountability system, and she put that on the agenda for the State Board of Education today, and the board voted to keep it from being considered. This is a big mess.
Sounds like one of those critical thinking questions that's on the new test, I guess. No, just simple answers, yes or no, or multiple choice. And I think what's making it so complicated, yeah, there are a set of facts, but everybody is attributing to the other side, you know, motives that are nefarious.
But motives aside, it seems like there's not been much in the way of communication or cooperation.
Well, that's no surprise, but that's been an ongoing issue. Now, again, who's to say where the blame should reside? I mean, you have two elected officials, both of whom arguably have a mandate, but they just happen to clash on how to implement what they perceive as their mission. I don't know the answer. It's I guess the fact that it's going to be shorter than it was can be viewed as a victory for those who thought 12 hours was a long test. I'm certainly glad that I'm not in school these days.
It's not all administered in one day either. I mean, it's
that's
important
right. They have
to understand
limits.
That.
There are limits in place for how much testing can be done
right.
on an individual
and she's
day.
Asked and those, for long, more and days to do it.
Right. So it's a matter of more days, not longer periods of time during a day. What should parents and teachers and students think at this point?
Parents and students and teachers and this Hoosier ought to be disgusted by what we've seen out of these people who are ostensibly leaders in the state. I think John's right. It's an intractable mess, and the reason is because they're all acting like the kids that they're purporting to try to help educate in the state of Indiana. They need to take some advice from Robert Fulghum and go to the corner and start reading what I learned in kindergarten, because that's what they're acting like. And it's disgusting. It really is. I think until these people decide that they can be adults about this and realize that more than half of the state's wealth is invested every year in educating kindergartners through high schoolers, and that the enterprise of the state is education of its students, and start acting like that matters to them and getting over this hissy fit that they're deciding that they're going to have all the time, I know the political stakes are high. I know there's a lot of money involved. But if you're true to the mission, if you want what you say you want, you'll shut the heck up and you'll get the job done.
Well, and you'll adopt one approach and stick with it for longer than 12 months. That's part of the other problem. We had the Indiana standards, then we had Common Core, then we had that pulled out after it was started to be implemented. You can't do it under those circumstances with the federal requirements and what the legislature puts on top of that.
The federal requirements were approved. What the Indiana test was approved by the feds. And so this thing moves forward. I mean, Arnie Duncan and company have all said that what we did here by changing what we did was okay. And it's moving forward.
As long as the transition test was developed and implemented within 12 months, where every other state has had 24 months to do it, you now interrupted me because we pulled out of Common Core.
Let's just still with the battle between Glenda Ritz and the governor. The Indiana House voted 58-40 this week to remove the Democratic state school superintendent from what previously was an automatic appointment as chairman of the State Board of Education. In a rare floor speech, House Speaker Brian Bosma tried to connect the testing problems to the power grab.
This has gone from dysfunctional to now detrimental to students. And when we put out something, a proposal, that our policymaking body doesn't even have an opportunity to weigh in on to increase testing by three times, there is something dramatically wrong. Not dysfunction, detriment.
You're saying that the people don't matter. You're saying that the bureaucrats, handpicked people, ought to be the ones who determine what happens in classrooms like mine in Michigan City.
Minority Leader Scott Pelath there, Mike McDaniel. Are the Republicans trying to undo the results of the 2012 election?
No. They're trying to move forward with education in the state. And, you know, what you've got going on here with this particular legislation, and I think Brian Bosma said it right when he said that what was a problem before was ramped up this week because of this latest blow-up of the test. If you wanted to guarantee that changes will be made, it was this latest episode. And the governor called for it to be shortened, and it will be shortened. But this was the final straw. And they understand the political calculation here of what you run the risk of making her a martyr to some people and others. But you got to decide. But you got to decide whether or not you want to wait another 2 years and have a system that's completely broke, or change it so that something can happen in 2 years. And they've decided that's what they're going to do. And this latest event probably did more to push that over the edge than anything going.
Yet, I thought it was notable there were at least a dozen Republicans who didn't vote for that.
That's right, because they realize that what they are trying to do is undo the will of the people in electing her. And what you've got here is, you know, Mike's calling for another change. That'll be the fourth change in 5 years. That's why this is dysfunctional. Ideology got in the way. Mitch Daniels proposed the Common Core. We were one of the first states to jump on board with that, and we were one of the first states to pull out. And that's why this testing is not working, because there are requirements from the federal government and the Indiana legislature where the Education Committee is headed by a florist. Not a librarian, but a florist. So you've got those problems in there. It's not, I don't think it's an epithet, but right. I don't think librarian is either.
Well, tell me, this whole idea of connecting the test problems to the need to remove her as state board chairman, is that a straw man or is that real?
I think in their minds that it's a real argument, and it, you know, and as the speaker pointed out, he sees that as the, you know, the proverbial straw. So I don't think it's a straw man. I think what they perceive is to be the situation and their excuse to do that. I think we're still stuck in that same mode that we've been in for so long. And, you know, it's a result of the high-stakes testing that has come along over the last 15 or 20 years, and everything is pegged to that. And with those high stakes, it's hard for everybody to do those right things and negotiate and come to an agreement, because now you've got that ramped up with the ideology that Ann mentioned, and nobody wants to move off of their position.
How's this end?
Not well. In all seriousness, I think the numbers are obvious. You have supermajorities, conservative supermajorities in both chambers.
And supermajorities that are big enough that maybe some folks in marginal districts can flake off.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, this week you saw similar, not identical, but similar legislation. The result would be the same. Glenda Ritz would not be the de facto chair of the state board anymore, but you see it both moving through the full House and then through an important Senate committee. So I think that's ultimately where it's going to end up. Now, you do see, I think, you mentioned some of the people backing away saying, you know, maybe appears hyper-political, but that I think one concession to that thought is the notion that, well, let's no longer would this, at least in, I think, the House bill, I'm not sure about Senate, this would not be, change would not be instituted immediately, but actually
they moved
would
it to
be,
July 1st.
Moved to July 1st.
But
which
they,
is
can
when,
they can easily move
well,
it back.
Well, they could, but I mean, that does at least, because most legislation takes effect on July 1st. It might give people a little cover
saying. Let's chair three more meetings.
Right. One thing, though, that I think gives some encouragement is Senator Kennelly has decided to wade in on this. It's not going to help with this test, because this test has to be specifically devised because of getting in and out of Common Core the way we did. But going forward in the future, what he's suggesting is rather than spending the millions of dollars on these vendors of testing machines that don't work or tests that we can't administer, that we buy one off the shelf and so, compare our kids to other kids, which is a great idea.
Actually, Senator Cruz has a bill to do that in the works. But, you know, this is one of those deals where you know, if you don't change it, we're going to keep having this fight. And that's
you're going to keep having
it.
This fight anyway,
well,
Michael.
Then that's
your
probably
ideology,
right.
Time
now.
Your ideology trumps
time
your
now
education
for
policy.
Viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, who's to blame for the length of the I-STEP test? Your choices are A, Glenda Ritz, B, Mike Pence, C, the federal government, or D, all of the above. Last week's question, is tuition-free community college a good idea? 48% said yes, 35% said no, 17% said only for the needy. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. An ethics reform package advanced in the General Assembly this week. A 2014 scandal involving former lawmaker Eric Turner prompted a call for lawmakers to make more of their personal financial information public. And that's what the Speaker's ethics reform bill calls for.
The goal here is to strengthen the disclosure to the public and to increase that transparency.
It also addresses problems raised in scandals involving former lawmaker Troy Woodruff and former state school superintendent Tony Bennett. The spokeswoman for watchdog organization Common Cause gave a stamp of approval.
It goes a long way to safeguarding the public trust because, as the speaker said, I think that has to be your goal.
But one lawmaker says no legislation will go far enough. Republican David Walkins also said that required ethics training in the bill is unnecessary.
If you haven't got ethics in your first 20 years of your life, you're not going to get it in 1 hour.
But for the speaker, it's about appearances.
It's not a culture of corruption, as some might say, because the men and women here, I know personally, are men and women of integrity. But it is a culture, perhaps in the past, of inattention to the potential appearance of conflict.
The committee passed the bill in a unanimous vote. John Ketzenberger, will anyone vote against that bill?
I have a hard time saying that it will pass without a no vote, but I'd be surprised if it does. You know, you've got 100 people, and it's possible that somebody will say that it doesn't go far enough or something like that, but I'd be really surprised if it doesn't go out 99-0.
I mean, in this session, we've seen how much of a rift there is over some of the education reform issues we just discussed. Here you have a bill that's co-sponsored or co-authored, actually, by Brian Bosma, the Republican House Speaker, and his Democratic House counterpart, Scott Pilath, the minority leader. And the fact that it came out of committee unanimously, I mean, clearly it's going to pass. And John's right. There may be one or two people who for whatever reason, personal protest would.
It's going to pass, but it won't necessarily stop the next scandal, right? I mean, we've seen ethics reform before. Well, there's always somebody who finds a way to skirt the rules, no matter what the rules are.
That's true. Over the course of time, you're always going to have somebody that does something. I mean, unfortunately. All of these people, all of these legislative bodies are made up by human beings, and not everybody follows the rules. So I guess eventually in your cynical approach to life that, yeah, I guess that's true. But to say that they made a major step in the right direction would...
With my career choice, cynicism is a gift.
That is true, too. But, no, I mean, yeah, this is a major step in the right direction, and that helped with transparency, and all four caucus leaders are on board. So I would imagine... If it's not unanimous, it'll be close to unanimous.
Yeah, it's definitely a good step because now you're going to actually know who owns the entities involved, and you're going to have some attempt to deal with the family members of legislators who do lobbying, and you're going to have a body that can ask questions. So it's very good. But to your point, as I said from the beginning, you cannot legislate judgment. Yeah.
Right.
Okay? And you just simply can't do it. And I just hope that the renewed culture here, people will stand up when they see an example like Eric Turner and say no.
Well, that's what Wilkins said.
Yeah, it's also David Wilkins' point in the story there. All right, suddenly grocery and big box stores are against a bill calling for Sunday alcohol sales, and the liquor store owners who are generally against Sunday sales are now in favor of it. That's because the bill also calls for an overhaul of regulations regarding the sale of alcoholic beverages that would give liquor stores an advantage over pharmacies, grocery stores, and big box stores. Those retailers would be required to keep alcohol in a segregated area of their stores, and hard liquor could only be sold over the counter. A liquor store spokesman suggested that some retailers are irresponsible in the way they market booze. Here's Patrick Tam.
Let's take a look at how alcohol is being sold. This is a Target store. This is Valentine's promotions, teddy bears, and alcohol. And a Walmart massive display of grab-and-go minis as well.
And behind the counter would significantly not just inconvenience the customers, but lead to less sales. And the segregated area, the same thing.
John Elliott of Kroger there. John Schwantes, how does this end up?
I can give you the short-term answer or the long-term answer. I think long-term, and by that I mean a matter of years, 5 years, 10 years, whatever, it will be Sunday sales, and everybody will have an opportunity without the additional restrictions. I think that's the so-called big box stores will be able to engage in it. Shorter term, this does complicate. I mean, if you had taken a one-day trip out of town on the day that this was amended in committee and came back, you'd say, what happened? Because everybody effectively
switched sides.
So that really does complicate it. I mean, this is a deal breaker, it seems to me, for a lot of the big box stores who simply wouldn't want to pay the money to sort of wall off these.
I think it's a tough call for them.
They don't want to be seen as killing the bill that they've been asking for so long.
Well, it's great politics.
It's terrific politics.
Well, it's as if Tom Dermody, who wrote the bill, said, you wanted this in the worst way. So here you got it in the worst way.
You know, an earlier version of this compromise, if you will, that was floating around about a month ago was take liquor completely out of the big box stores and the grocery stores, and clearly that didn't happen. The idea is, okay, if you want to sell it, then you put it back with the cigarettes and the Sudafed, and you can sell liquor. That's the liquor store's pound of flesh, if you will, for allowing the bill to go forward and say, okay, we can have Sunday sales, but it's going to be under these terms.
But this is the first step in the legislative process.
That's right, and I would be surprised if it wound up this way. I just love it with super majorities and big free market, except if we have powerful lobbyists who give a lot of contributions, then maybe it's not quite so free.
Well, it is a regulated industry, Anne.
It's a regulated industry, but even so. I mean, come on, some of these things are silly. They're absolutely silly. And when you look at what's happening in the press in between these two sides, the gloves are clearly off. We've got brass knuckles on in this fight.
Well, this has nothing to do with morality. This has nothing to do with Sunday.
With
this is
share.
All about market share, right?
Well, it's also about the fact that it is a regulated industry. And you got a situation where you had stores with back-to-school specials where the beer is stacked up to the ceiling next to the checkout counter, you know, where kids can go in and be readily available to kids.
Hey, you're going
to
have a situation where exam. What do you want?
Well, yeah,
that's
right.
Exactly. That's
exactly
right. They need to pop one to get through that. Thank you, Governor, for shortening it.
But seriously, this is
one of those deals that's a classic example of the people who've been screaming the loudest that they want this now are backing away. Well, they're not going to back away from this.
No.
And the arguments that this is too expensive for them. You know, Walmart spills more than a day, and they're talking about that would cost them to retrofit one of these places. So at least you segregate the
Walmart
this stuff.
Said it would cost them $50 to $60 million to retrofit.
Right.
That's a lot of
Come
money.
Come on. Well, first of all, anybody believes that in Indiana it's going to cost them $50 million to put a wall up
well,
to
I think
where
in,
you're
in
going to
some of the supermarkets is going to be is going to cost some problems.
Will this bill end up in this fashion?
Pretty close.
No, I don't think so. But one thing that is healthy, I think. For years, this was tied up in the morals debate. You know, it's going to keep people from going to church. Will it? And clearly, that was
still out there.
I know there may be some of that, this is what it is. It's an economic and it's a market.
It's money.
Issue.
It's money.
And at least that's on the table now.
Finally, the boys' basketball season is over for two high school teams in Northwest Indiana. That's the punishment handed down by the IHSAA over a brawl during a game between Griffith and Hammond. In addition to canceling the rest of the regular season, both schools are also suspended from participating in the postseason. The fight broke out after a hard foul against a Griffith player. Both benches and the stands cleared. The police are considering charges. And Delaney, is that punishment appropriate?
You know, I'm in a kind of an awkward position here because ordinarily anything the IHSAA wants, I'm against. But in this particular case, judging from that film, it seems to me that the penalty fits the crime, so to speak.
It was 4-0 when that happened. It was the beginning of the game.
It's my understanding that this started like days before when some players from opposite teams were tweeting back and forth about, you know, what's going to happen on the game day and so forth and so on. Then the JV game got a little ugly. And then the start of this game, it all kind of erupted into that. And then when you start letting people get out of the stands and on the court, nothing good going to happen. The punishment wasn't nearly enough, in my opinion.
I didn't have my glasses on. Was that Pence and Ritz going at it, or was it? This seems pretty harsh, though, because I did see people who were trying to break it up. There were bad apples in every situation, yeah. And there are people who are trying to do the right thing, and
it's
this
nice
is a blanket approach.
It's nice to see action taken of some kind, though. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T, rethink possible.